The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have Peter King, and we have Jake Plummer, and we have Eric Sorensen. We have a busy, damn busy show today. I'm in a fine mood because there's a story that, once again, you just cannot make this stuff up when it comes to the world of sports. We should come up with a title for that, Eric, like... Time for the segment of You Just Can't Make This Up Except for the World of Sports. And I will have that story shortly. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union. I am going to Desert Financial Credit Union today. You guys ever get into a space where you have to go take care of financial stuff and you're just like, ugh. That's not how it is for me at Desert Financial Credit Union. Even when there's tough things that I'm trying to work through or looking at refinancing or whatever it might be, whether it's the business or on the personal side, Desert Financial Credit Union makes a lot of sense for us, taking care of us, taking care of our business. They can do the same for you. That's Desert Financial Credit Union. Now here's Eric Sorensen. What is new? What are you doing with this? What is this all about?
It'll end. It'll end sooner than later. Did you feel that lull last night around 6 o'clock like I did when I went searching for a live sporting event, and for the first time in many, many months, there was nothing to be found?
Some would say there was nothing to be found even over the last 3 months. There is that segment that is proudly proclaiming, I did not watch one Major League Baseball game. I did not watch one NBA game. I did not watch one NHL game. And I would say, knock yourself out. If you did go write books and lose weight and hike hills, and great. I'm just looking at this thing that's going on with you. You know we have a grooming policy.
No, it's
you know
just,
we have a dress
fine.
Code. You know, I know we have a stringent dress code here.
I'm just a day late. That's all. I'm not going to show up looking like Ryan Fitzpatrick. I promise.
So do you see Roberta Baker? This is one of those obvious ones in terms of him in the news cycle being named the NFC Defensive Player of the Month. Do you see this?
I did. Now, he did it in three games, which is pretty ridiculous, pretty to win Player of the Month in three games.
So we've talked about how he's a second-round pick, and we talk about the idiocy and the lunacy that is the NFL draft and the combine, and everybody's all caught up in it. We go to the combine. When I say idiocy, it's that people say, oh, these guys are can't-miss dudes. So here's Buda Baker, the highest-paid safety in the game. Let me just go a little bit down the list of the 2017 NFL draft. Myles Garrett was the number one overall pick at Cleveland. He's fine. Mitchell Trubisky was number two with the Bears. Not fine. I'll go down the list a little bit. Christian McCaffrey was taken eighth. Seven guys were better than Christian McCaffrey. Now, Jamal Adams and Mike Williams, yeah, I'll agree with you on that.
Yep.
Patrick Mahomes was taken 10th.
Yep.
Deshaun Watson was taken 12th. The almighty Haason Reddick was taken 13th by your hometown heroes in that year's draft.
There's still hope. There's still hope.
I know. They're talking about him. Let me see if I just go down here. Taco Charlton was taken by the Cowboys at number 28. How'd that work out?
He's
Reuben
fine.
Foster was taken by the 49ers at the 31st pick.
Mm.
Seattle took Malik McDowell. Malik McDowell, a defensive tackle out of Michigan State, who has a bunch of zeros across from his name. So I'm thinking that didn't go well, the pick before. And then Buda Baker was taken. So... You know, it's like when David Johnson came here and the feel-good story about David Johnson and all that stuff. And we sat here and said they're really overusing David Johnson. And now David Johnson looks like a shell of himself, except when he swipes his debit card. That part of it, he's got going good because he got paid.
That particular draft class, Brad, is interesting because you have a lot of the Seahawk fans bemoaning the fact that they didn't take Buda Baker, who wanted to play.
Yes.
The Seahawks, who went to the University of Washington. And then you have those quietly whispering Cardinal fans that said, man, we took Andy Isabella and we could have had DK Metcalf. But that happens in every draft. And I hate those arguments because, you know, these GMs, they're allowed to make missteps in the draft. So or draft the player that they like more than another, because it's all a crapshoot. It is. Patrick Mahomes, 10th in that draft.
10th. So I thought about this morning. I'm going to try to see Steinberg next week when I go out for the ASU game. Because I'm going in on Friday. I'm trying to see Fabiano. So he's not returning my texts. And I don't know if he's mad at me because I'm not doing the segment anymore. Sandy is. I don't know. I love Michael, but I haven't heard back from him. I'm going to go see, you met Jeff Friedman. Jeff Friedman is the star of stars who lines me up with these interviews with actors and actresses. I'm going to go to his house. I woke up this morning, I was like, I need to go see Steinberg. So Lee and I used to do a show years ago, and he's in Newport Beach. My wife's like, you know, it's COVID Central over there. You're not going to be able to see any of these people. So we'll see. I'm excited for the ASU-USC game.
Of course.
2 days ago, I was saying on the show, I'm not going to get approved for a credential. And yesterday, I got approved. This is my kind of, like, you went to North Central Arizona 2 weeks ago to tell a story, right?
Yep, the Verde Valley. That's
right. You actually started that story over on the west side of town.
The far west side of town, yes.
At 4 in the morning.
At 4:12 a.m., correct.
Yeah. And then you went to the Verde Valley to tell part of the story. And then you came back and told the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say, at like 8:30 that night.
That's correct.
Is that about right?
Yeah.
And you live to tell. Yeah. So I've got, in my circles, they're like, why are you going to the ASU-USC game when they're not allowing fans in? Exactly. It's like when you went to the Cardinal game.
Weird. It's a weird experience. It might be a little different because USC may have an open press box. I'm not sure. I can't remember. It's an older press box.
It is older.
But going to watch a Cardinal game from the press box in 2020 is like watching a game on mute. There's no sound. It's silent. Like, you can hear the PA announcer, and that's all you hear.
I'm hoping to get ejected. You know, like, I want to go climb to the top, like we're talking about where the flame is.
Right.
And just sit up there and take it in and see a bunch of ants running around. Because the winner of that game, and it's a week from Saturday, we're finally going to have Pac-12 football. Week from Saturday. And to me...
9 a.m. too, Brad.
9 a.m.
Yeah, it's great. As Brad said, it's a great spark time. You're the only person in America who thinks that 9 a.m. Pac-12 kickoff on the West Coast is a good time to start, but that's a debate for another day.
It is going to get national eyeballs. They're going to be on in the early afternoon highlights, the late evening, the late night, all day long. They're going to be on Big Fox. Now, I've not heard yet if Big Fox... It's like ESPN rolled out all the big guns for the Big Ten opener.
Mm-hmm.
So who's going to roll out the big guns? Like, is Fox going to go put Leinart and Reggie and Urban on the field in the end zone in the empty Coliseum?
Probably not.
Will game day show up and have Lee Corso? I like Lee Corso. It's just time for that to go into a podcast. That's it.
Game day is going to be at the Masters this week doing...
Boxing. I love that. No, yeah, that's right. I heard that.
I'm sorry. Next week.
Next week.
Weeks off. Yep.
Yeah, you're right. Next week. No, I love that they're going to be at the Masters.
This week is they're at the Masters. Next week is ASU-USC. I'm sorry to confuse everyone.
But for ASU, we're going to see who's really in on them. Like, in terms of the Pac-12 and what their media partners look like, think like. Because no games are on the Pac-12 network, if you noticed.
Yay!
The TV schedule. Not one.
Yay!
We love this network so much, and we've taken sponsor money for the last 9 years. If they would have put any amount of that money into us, we would have over-delivered. Where the Pac-12 network's like, oh yeah, you know, nobody's watching. It's ridiculous.
They'll put Crew on or something like that in its place. It's fine.
Nothing wrong with Crew, but... Okay, this story. I don't know if you have access to go to get on the LA Times website today. This story made me cackle with laughter. A1, front page, LA Times, less than a week before the election, with COVID-19 going on. There's a lot of big things in the world. But UCLA football is feasting on steak, if not opponents. Success-starved team enjoys an unparalleled menu and food budget despite deficit. So, I had to start reading through this. Under coach Chip Kelly, who sees nutrition as key to making of a football player, it has gotten very expensive. In 2018, his first year at UCLA, the budget for non-travel meals doubled to $2.6 million. The following year, it grew to $5.4 million.
Those are non-travel meals.
Non-travel. Dwarfing spending in higher profile programs, raising questions about UCLA athletic department with a reported $18.9 million deficit for last year. So the LA Times got 500 pages of invoices and receipts and some of this stuff. During off-season workouts last year, UCLA spent more than $40,000 to import barbecue meals from an Arizona-based restaurant. Honey Bears?
Maybe. That would make sense.
Don't you think?
There is good barbecue out here, though, so it could be a number of different places. But yeah, Honey Bears would probably be my leader in the clubhouse.
$40,000. Hey, get a truck, get it over here. On other occasions, the program ordered hundreds of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches from an LA caterer, $4.95 each. You can obviously feed an entire football team great and nutritious food for a lot less money, said past president of the Drake Group, which advocates reform in college sports. $2 million on non-travel food, question mark.
Jeez.
So this story went for like 10 pages. Under previous coach Jim Moore, the program usually provided one meal each day, supplemented by hearty snacks such as breakfast burritos and personal pizzas. Me and a lot of the older guys said food, one player said. Players said that once Chip Kelly signed his five-year $23.3 million contract, he asked what needed to change. The players said, we need more food. So Jim Moore said one meal a day. Under Chip Kelly, every meal is covered. Every snack is covered. Every bit is covered. You have to believe that some guys are probably taking advantage of this. Price
the
per head.
The Pac-12 commissioner would probably sign off on this, right? Because he's been known to have a bit of an extravagant budget when it comes to meals and travel. So
the price per head range for $53 a meal, according to invoices reviewed by the Times. Occasional late evening snacks came in at $29 a person. The meals were usually catered for 170 people. So do the math every day. Now, what does this look like at Arizona State and U of A? Because somebody down at the Republic will say, you know what? Well, I would hope they would. We should probably see what this looks like here locally. I don't know. When they listed like some of the stuff these guys were being fed, and it's grass-fed this, which is fine. But I couldn't even pronounce half the stuff because it's really long and really fancy sounding.
So. And football players eat a lot of food.
They
a
do.
Lot.
I know this. I have a 16-year-old who happens to play, and he eats a ton of it. The Super Bowl's not going to have fans. Do we care?
Yeah, I'd love to see fans, but it's not in the cards. So,
like, what do you mean it's not in the cards? Might be.
Well,
in the
I mean,
cards.
It's 2020.
Cards might make it. Cards might make it. What do you mean it's not in the cards?
Maybe.
Think positive, man.
Maybe they got a shot.
Come on, man. Think positive. And then there's Nebraska. So, where are you at on this one, Mr. College Football Man, Mr. College Football Insider? I shouldn't say insider. That's you don't like that term. Nebraska game against Wisconsin gets canceled. Chattanooga comes along and says, we'll play you this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Big Ten says, that's not happening. Where are you at?
I don't know why the Big Ten would not want some of their teams to play, especially considering they are a month behind every other school or most schools besides our beloved Pac-12. But it is sort of, it is, I guess, in a way fitting that, you know, Nebraska pounded the pulpit all year to play football. And the Big Ten says, that's great. We're back. Oh, by the way, you can go to Columbus to start your season. And now the second game against Wisconsin, another game they were probably going to lose, got canceled.
Yeah.
So nothing really surprises me. I think it would be great, though, Brad, if Goodell scheduled an NFL game next Tuesday night. Wouldn't that be fun? There's not much going on next Tuesday night. Let's just throw an NFL game up there. It'd be a good distraction for America.
Well, the next 10 weeks? We're 10 weeks away from Christmas? And the NHL said that they're not going to get started until late December, early January. The NBA. So for the next 10 weeks, you really don't have much other than college sports.
Correct.
But I'll go further than this. At what point does the Big Ten say, read between the lines to Nebraska? At what point does the Big Ten say, you know, you guys have acted petulant. You threatened to sue us. Now you're losing your minds because we're just saying we have to all be together on this. Mm-hmm. And you guys are just saying, well, we're Nebraska. We're going to do what we want to do. You guys need to go find another conference. At what point does that happen? Does the Big Ten really need to have Nebraska in
sure.
order for them to be relevant?
No, but I think Nebraska is a great piece for the Big Ten.
Why? Is Maryland a great piece?
No, but
Nebraska had a great brand back in the day.
But they still have a great brand. They're still a blue blood program. They just haven't been relevant in the last two decades. But it's still Nebraska football. Like if you go walk around the stadium, like they still have national championships up. They still have hundreds of All-Americans.
Yeah, but that's in Lincoln. There's nothing in Lincoln except Nebraska. Football.
I don't know. I'm not going to argue with the fact that Nebraska has not been on the national map, but I just think it's foolish for the Big Ten. The Big Ten wants big teams in big stadiums with big crowds. Check, check, check. Nebraska.
But we're in a day where I think you're right in the past, but I think in 2020 they need teams in big television markets. Lincoln, Nebraska is not a big television market. They have Chicago. I mean, Illinois can stink forever, but they have a Chicago TV market. Doesn't matter.
They have Rutgers and Jersey.
Rutgers and Maryland, you just look at it and say, other than it's Michigan State against Rutgers, you just look at it and say, in this new world of conference realignment, like if the Pac-12 said, we're going to do this, and Arizona State said, no, we're not going to go do that. Our game against USC was canceled. We're going to go play UTEP. It's the same deal. You have to be all together on this. And Nebraska has been anything but all together. So that's my point is it doesn't matter if they're not as good as they once were. Do I have to see Nebraska play Ohio State? No. Do I have to see Nebraska play Michigan? No. Do I have to see Nebraska play Texas? Yeah. Do I have to see Nebraska play TCU? Yes. Do I have to see Nebraska play Kansas State? Yeah. They belong over in the Big 12 somewhere. They don't belong in this conference.
But Nebraska's not leaving unless they're told to leave because of this little thing right here, the dollar signs.
Right. I mean,
the Big 10 makes so much more money than the Big 12 does. It makes sense
today for
Nebraska to stay if the conference will want them. And not every team in the Big Ten is a big TV market. East Lansing, Michigan, Madison, Wisconsin. I mean, those aren't like destination cities when it comes to TV.
But they feed into the Detroit market. They feed into the Chicago market. It's like saying, you know, Eugene is not relevant to the Pac-12 because they're not in a big TV market. Well, actually they are because they have Nike funding everything that they do.
No, I get
that. There's a reason why we see Oregon State on a national TV with the Nike swoosh on it.
Right.
You know, if Nike weren't based in Beaverton, those two schools, forget it.
But Omaha is not a tiny city, and Omaha is 45 minutes from Lincoln. I'm not comparing it to Chicago or New Jersey, but it's not a complete outpost like people think it is.
But if the Longhorn Network goes away in this next round of TV negotiations, okay, because Texas said, we'll just go form our own network. And that's been a disaster. It hasn't been distributed well. They're asking too much money for it and their subs on cable. These conferences that think they can go form their own deal, just look at what Notre Dame did. Notre Dame said, okay, we're going to go to NBC. We're going to be available to everybody. Okay. In COVID, we're going to change course and we're going to go be with the ACC this year.
Really smart. Really smart idea.
Right. Mm-hmm. So rather than Nebraska saying, let's go sue and let's go say how great we are and we're going to go stomp our feet and act like little kids, you have Notre Dame over here handling pretty much the same situation, I would say, other than they were an independent. I mean, BYU hasn't played anybody. We talked about this, but BYU has handled their business the right way. we're going to go find a schedule and we're going to get it put on television and let's act like adults here. And it doesn't matter if it's BYU, Texas State. That's ESPN's decision to put three hours of airtime on that.
Because there is no Pac-12 night game. That's why you're seeing these 7 o'clock BYU fill in the blank team start times.
For this week. Next week there is. Next week. And every one of the Pac-12 games next week is either on Fox, FS1, ESPN, or ESPN2. They're not on CBS, because CBS is SEC, and they're not on their own network, which, you guys, just pull the plug now and surrender. Just, you can't figure it out? Hire me. I can program the Pac-12 network. Not that hard. Not that hard. All right, Peter King is next. And then Jake Plummer. Stay with us. Time now, as promised, Peter King jumps on in. The Peter King Football Morning in America. It is a must read. Make sure you check it out. And then there's the Peter King podcast with Joe Buck with Fox, who I thought did a terrific job last night in the World Series. All right, so here it is. It's Super Bowl. It is fourth quarter. James Conner and the Steelers are marching down the field. And all of a sudden, James Conner gets taken off the field. And you're sitting up there in the press box saying, why is James Conner not in the game? And the Steelers, they go on and they win the game. And then the photo op is taken afterwards. James Conner comes back out on the field. And he takes off his mask and everybody loses their minds. Can you see that scenario happening with Justin Turner last night in the NFL, Peter, down the road?
I can't figure out how Major League Baseball is operating by getting tests back in the middle of a game. I just don't get that at all. Now, you know, if this is as innocent as they portrayed, which is we found out about a positive test is at whatever, 10 o'clock Central Time, whatever time it was, and it happened like that, then you know, that's the way it goes. It's a freaky time in 2020. But I don't like a system that returns results in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
And that then the game could be, I mean, think of it this way, Brad. I forget who they put in there. Let's say they put in Kike Hernandez. And I truly do forget who they put in. But whoever they put in, let's say it's 1-1, ninth inning, and up comes the guy who would be Justin Turner, you know, and so it has a tremendous impact on the game. And also, let's say one other thing. What if Justin Turner had hit a two-run homer in the fourth inning and put the Dodgers ahead and they won playing with a COVID-positive player that Major League Baseball allowed to be playing? And I mean, that thing last night raised so many questions about it, but quite honestly, it was so perfectly 2020.
Well, and what if the Rays come back and win? Do the Dodgers play tonight? Because there's a whole team.
That's a great question.
You know, yeah. I mean, so you have to look at it from that standpoint. I guess my overarching question to you is this. It looked like back on the first week of August that this was a huge mistake by Major League Baseball. Playing with the Miami Marlins being canceled, games being shifted, nobody really knew what was going on. And I've got to believe the NFL sits over in their offices and say, so how are they going about it? Yes, there's been some games shifted around. Is there going to be a point where they sit in around a table and say, okay, if we get in this scenario, we have to get this button down because we cannot have what happened in Major League Baseball happen here in the NFL?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question, Brad. You know, in baseball, I thought on July 30th, August 1st, 2nd, 3rd, whatever, there's no way they're going to make it through the season.
Yeah.
Can't happen. And Rob Manfred just stayed the course and said, we're going to do this. And they kept going, and they did it. It's a little bit different in football in two ways. Number one, I think they're throwing a lot more money at the problem. And they have to throw a lot more money at the problem because instead of having, you know, whatever, I guess there are 30 teams and every day you're testing maybe, you know, 50 or 60 people per team, including the players. You know, in the NFL, players alone, you're testing 2,460 players every day. That doesn't include the 100 kind of essential workers who get a test every single day. And so for every team in the NFL, you're testing about 160 people or so. So every day. So look, now as the virus continues to spread and it gets colder, I just believe, Brad, that the NFL is going to have major issues mm-hmm. in the next few weeks. It would be impossible. How is it possible that when you look on the heat maps of the United States and one of the worst places in the country is Green Bay, Wisconsin, how is it possible that the Packers are going to be unscathed? You can't get a bed in a hospital in Northeast Wisconsin right now. And, you know, and I'm exaggerating, but I just think there's going to be problems and significant problems. And already the NFL is almost out of bye weeks to fool around with so that teams can figure a way to play. But I'll make one other point about this, that one of the reasons why I believe that the NFL really does not want a week 18, they may have to have one, but one of them is what Roger Goodell told me the first week of September. Look what happened when everybody said push the draft back, and we said we don't want to push the draft back because there's no guarantee it's going to be any better with the virus in this country 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month from now. Do it now. Push free agency back, the same thing.
Right.
So that's why I believe, Brad, that I think Roger Goodell, he would rather have six teams play 14 games, I think, than he would say, hey, let's add another week to the season. I got in an argument, a major argument on Saturday night with a very influential NFL person in a front office. And I said, I think it's a huge mistake to add week 18. Because what is to say that in week 18, one of your 8 or 10 teams playing that week has an outbreak? You know, don't extend the season. Just try to battle through with what you have right now. That's what I think they should do. Will they do it? I don't know.
So Justin Turner removing a mask for a photo op would pale in comparison. That'd be Mount Vesuvius if there weren't an equal number of games being played by teams in the NFL in the postseason. It's really interesting where it's heading. Peter King is with us. Football morning in America. Okay, Trevor Lawrence yesterday says, you know, I think I'm going to leave, but I might want to stick around here. Last week you mentioned just in passing that you and Chris Collinsworth were talking about the Jets on your podcast and what may happen. Peter, I know you're focused really hard into the NFL season, but Trevor Lawrence is one of those once-in-a-generational players that comes along. What are you hearing around the league about him?
That no matter what happens this college football season, that this isn't going to be a thing like Tua Tagovailoa could lose the first pick in the draft because of either an injury or performance, which happened last year, obviously, to Joe Burrow. That it's virtually that Trevor Lawrence is what Andrew Luck was. If we push the clock back, I guess it would be the 2011 college football season, when late October 2011, everyone knew, every single person on the planet knew, that 6 months later, Andrew Luck was going to be the first pick in the draft. And I think everybody knows that here. So it's all up to Trevor Lawrence. If he looks at the landscape and says, I'm not going to play this game, I'm not going to the New York Jets, so I'll go back to college football. Then he goes back to college football. Everybody said, oh my God, never happened before. Yes, it did. It happened with Peyton Manning in 1997. Peyton Manning, even though he really didn't want to go to the New York Jets that year in the draft, it was a little bit more about, and it was a decision made on the night of the deadline of declaring for the draft. Peyton Manning sat in Knoxville, Tennessee with his dad, went for a drive, and he said, you know, I'll have a long time to be a pro. It was more about his love of being in college than it was his hatred of the New York Jets. But if I were Trevor Lawrence, honestly, I'd be thinking very seriously, do I want to play? And again, look, whether the Jets hire Eric Bieniemy, Josh McDaniels, Arthur Smith of the Titans, I mean, whoever it is, Byron Leftwich, I don't know what they're going to do, but that's going to be a decision for Trevor Lawrence and his benefactors to make, because, you know, there's no guarantee in 2022 it's going to be any better if Jacksonville has the first pick, let's say.
Sure. That's well put. Before I get you out of here, the Cardinals are on a bye week, but the NFC West does have a showdown with Seattle and the 49ers. The 49ers are really interesting. We saw them here in Arizona week one. They were depleted at wide receiver. They're depleted again. No Deebo Samuel, no Jeff Wilson, the running back, I should say. Brandon Ayuk, who we saw here at ASU, has been terrific for John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. And we just saw Seattle here. Peter, the NFC West, every week I talk about the Cardinals then, but I'm curious, the NFC West from your view outside of Arizona, we saw the Rams take apart the Bears the other night. We're at the midpoint of the season. Can you make some evaluation of who's going to separate from who in the West?
It's the best division in the NFL. It's not even close. It's one of the best divisions I've seen in years. You know, it's amazing this year that the best team in the NFC East would be 5-11 this year in the in the NFC West. The NFC East this year, in my opinion, or the NFC West this year, in my opinion, I really hope that the weirdest thing happens, and it would be so cool if all four teams made the playoffs. Now, highly unlikely that happens, because probably you're going to have both Tampa and New Orleans make it. But I do think that all four of them are playoff worthy. I mean, imagine, it's still possible, of course, for the Arizona Cardinals to finish last in that division. They might be the most exciting team in football. They're so much fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But as far as the whole division goes, I think this is going to be all about health and how well the San Francisco 49ers can play with particularly a depleted defense. Because I think as the year goes on in Seattle, they're going to be able to add Snacks Harrison to that run defense. At some point, Jamal Adams, gets healthy. And I think whether it be Ryan Kerrigan, Tack McKinley, somebody, I just think that John Schneider looks at his defense and knows he needs a pass rusher and is going to go out and find one at the trade deadline.
Peter, I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insight. As always, stay safe. Thanks.
All right. Hey, thanks very much, Brad.
There is Peter King, Football Morning in America. And again, the Peter King podcast this week with Joe Buck. Make sure you check out all of Peter's content. And we're back with more after this time out. As promised, it is time to catch up with the one and only Jake Plummer. And I say one and only because through the years, as I've known this dude, he has just done this. He keeps doing this. He went from college to the NFL, and then he became dad. I'm not saying down, just out of the shot. He did this as dad, and then husband, and then entrepreneur, and so I'm getting caught up with it, right? How are you doing? Forget about football for a minute. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm halfway to 90, and I think as I'm catching the tail end of, or the beginning of what is happening with health and wellness, I'm going to go past 90, I have a feeling. So I'm not even halfway yet, and things are good. Obviously, there's challenges. We're all facing the biggest one right now, which is COVID. How do you relate to that? How do you adjust to it? How do you survive through it? Obviously, having some financial freedom makes it a little easier, but still, you're still coping with the things everyone's dealing with, wondering what this thing is, how long it's going to be around. Why can't I see my friends? Why won't they come see me? You know, it's different, but all in all, it's about, you know, keeping yourself happy and healthy and moving forward. And then, you know, like you mentioned, family, you know, I've got to really focus on my kids and my wife and, you know, just making every day the best it can be. And, you know, from the outside, people see me doing a lot of stuff, but internally, you know, every day I got to try to challenge myself to just get up and get better, do something to make myself feel good, try to bring joy into the world. And one thing I like to say is when you see somebody, try to leave them a little lighter than they were when they came to you. Cause it's a lot, there's a lot of heavy stuff going on outside of our little bubbles. And it's just good to spread joy and love and happiness to people if you can.
A 10-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old, married, she likes to dance. I mean, you have a lot of moving parts. Are you guys quarantining? Like, you're not around anybody. You're up in Colorado, for people who don't know, yeah. You're in Boulder.
We stay pretty limited to who and how many people we see, but we have groups of friends, a couple families with kids that are also isolating as much as they can, except when they go out, they, you know, put on a mask. If they go do something like go to a pumpkin patch, we wear our masks, we disinfect, you know, you keep your distance, you do everything that you can to have some semblance of normalcy. But we've got some friends that we see every now and again. And then family, you know, I got to see my mom. I got to see, you know, some of my family to see how they're doing. You can't see them through Zoom and get what you need from that. So it's been interesting, you know, because, you know, for me and what I'm doing in my life, interaction is key. Relationships are key. But the new world we're adjusting to is the fact that we can Zoom, we can see each other on camera. And that suffices for now until there's some, you know, something in the long run that can hopefully let us crawl out of our holes and get back to how we were as a community and getting together. And we live in a great neighborhood here, though. We got a couple kids next door that we know are isolating, so we let them play with our kids, and a couple people in the neighborhood that like to see us and once in a while stop and chat. So, you know, we're not isolated and quarantined completely. This thing, I think I had it earlier in the year, and I'm really not afraid of any virus. I'm respecting the virus, but I'm not living my life in fear, because fear can be debilitating.
Have you talked to any of your teammates? ASU teammates, do you stay in touch with them during all this?
Through text sometimes, personal calls on others. I've reached out to a few guys I haven't talked to in a while just to say, hey, how's it going? I think a lot of them, you know, obviously I don't know the ones that are struggling. I haven't found them yet, but most of the guys I've talked to have embraced this time to really get back to taking care of their health and wellness. You know, a guy like Scott Bondurahi I talked to, who was dealing with a lot of issues with CTE and the ramifications of that whole dire outlook for all those guys. He finally said, I got to get out of this. I got to forget about it, not even think about it. I'm not getting, saying one more thing about it. And he's now like ripped up in shape, can run, is thinking clearly, speaking good. He got out of that. You know, when you get encapsulated or engulfed into something that can be so dire and have the outlook of, oh my God, am I going to be able to remember my kids' names? It can become who you are. And so his way was to just forget about it. Get out of here. I got to go on with my life and live. Can't worry about 20 years from now, but what I can do now is take care of myself. And so I've been doing that and helping spread the word on some just ways to be healthier and use some, you know, what the earth gives us, some plant medicine to just feel better, to live better, to open up those channels, to become in touch with mind, body, and spirit, to get through this crazy time we're all engulfed in.
You and I both had a ton of respect and knew Pat Tillman very well. What would he be saying about this stuff if you were around?
You know, I don't know if I'm at the stage I need to be at to speak on Pat's behalf anymore. You know, I've become his somewhat of a mouthpiece for him. But I guess internally, when I look in the mirror, I haven't been living the way I should to represent him, which for Pat, when I say that, Pat was always doing something. He was never sitting around doing nothing or wondering what's next. He was challenging himself. So I've gone back to try to like do that again. For years of talking about playing the piano, now I'm starting to put my fingers on the keys, like literally put my fingers on the keys and do it. And so I don't know what Pat would be doing right now. You know, I think it's hard to say. The guy might, I know one thing is he would not be fearful. He would not be living in a hole and isolating himself, because what he did and what he was all about was his people, his friends, and spreading that love and that energy. So I think he would be reaching out to everybody he could to make sure they're doing okay, like he did to me before he left for his last deployment, to check on my status and see how I was doing. And, you know, I don't know. You never know what would come out of his mouth. There'd be some crazy words, some F-bombs probably, but he'd probably be cursing this virus, saying, forget about it. It's not going to get me.
And I don't mean that in disrespect, Jake, because I think there's been entirely too much people wrapping themselves around Pat, quite honestly. And there's times where I'm really uncomfortable with it. But I do think that there are times to have a conversation with someone who knew him very, very well. Obviously, I didn't know him as well as you did, but we did things together. And so, you know, in this space, when I see things going on, I'll go back to people that I've covered through the years. I covered Muhammad Ali. What would Muhammad Ali think about all this stuff? You know, what would this person think? And what would that person think? And then what would Pat Tillman think? And so, because it is a time that nobody's ever been through, and everybody would react so differently to it, I do believe.
Yeah. And, you know, I've always at times thought, you know, in certain situations, what would Pat do, or what would he think or say about this? And this is one you never know, because everybody has their own way of dealing with this. And out of respect for everybody's approach to this COVID and the environment we're in, you know, you kind of have to respect that. Personally, COVID or not, I think our world just needs a lot more compassion and community and kindness, and less, you know, less dividing the line down the middle. You know, that's what Pat would hate right now, is that, oh, you're going to divide the line and I'm either on this side or that side. Like, wait a sec. You know, I learned how to compromise. That's what you learn when you play sports. That's how you learn to get along with everybody on your team. You can't just draw a hard line and say, oh, you think this way, I hate you. So I think there's a lot of hate. There's a lot of poison being spread. I hope that there's some major changes made that can usher in a new era of just being good to each other, being good to the earth first, being good to each other. And hopefully that will spread and we can all find some way to be at peace, you know. And I know it's hard. Struggle is there for a lot of people. And I want to get involved and hopefully help some of those people out. But if anybody out there is wondering what to do, you know, check on your neighbor, see how they're doing. You can do that with a mask on respectfully and spread that to one person and it becomes contagious.
Your ReadyList Pro project, and we've had the spot on the show here for the last 3 years. You've been trying to grow this. It's something that I think is very smart. Now we're in a space where people are Zooming and learning remotely. How is that going, where you're teaching kids, college students, all the way up, the intricacies of playing football, quarterbacking, so on and so forth?
Yeah, you know, ReadyList Sports, remember, Pro was our first iteration. It's sports now, because we feel we have a chance as we perfect football to move into other sports. It's been a very interesting journey to become a tech entrepreneur with no background in either tech or business, but a PhD in football, and the knowledge in there to know how, like, to understand what it takes for these kids to learn offense, learn defense, learn football, know the game so that they can go out there and play fast, which I believe when you play fast and your free mind on the field, you play with a little more, you're a little more safe out there, less prone to injury when you're hesitating, not knowing what to do. And then the game becomes more enjoyable. And when I was in high school, I knew two coverages, one safety or two safeties. That's it. And then we ran a few plays, and then I booted out left and right. I mean, that's what we did. That's like 5-year-old football that I was playing in high school. High school kids now know as much as I did when I was playing in the pros. So there's a lot of pressure on them. There's an intense pressure on them to know the game of football. Yet at the college level and even into the pro level, there's still coaches that lack the ability to teach properly, to coach that into these kids. Trickle that down to high school. How many great high school coaches are there? There's very few. So teaching kids the game at a high, high level at that lower level that's become paramount now is really hard. And I think causes a lot of stress for a 15-year-old, 16-year-old that has dreams and aspirations to get a scholarship and play in the pros. How are you going to do that? I mean, there's only so many hours in a day. We've come with a product that helps make the learning process much more efficient. It helps the coaches teach much more efficiently. It's way more accessible. It's very intuitive. We've come a long way. Our tech kicks ass. I'll tell you that right now. Any coach out there that doesn't have it, they will be like, why didn't I have this? When they finally figure it out. The ones that have it, they're ahead of the curve. They've used it through the COVID. They were loving it because they were able to reach their kids, push information to them when they could not meet, they could not practice, couldn't even see your kids. There's a lot of coaches that their kids came back on the practice field when they opened it back up and they said, we barely missed a beat. Our kids were ready to go. They knew where they were supposed to line up. They knew what they were doing. We didn't have to coach that into them. They knew it already. So that's big for us. Landing a team in the NFL, the New York Jets, which, you know, they're not winning ball games, but hey, they used it. They proved that it is useful at the highest level, all the way down to 5-on-5, 6-7-year-old kids playing flag football. We've built something really special, and we're not going to quit. We're going to keep going. As budgets got froze this year, it was tough to get people to buy in, but we have a lot of coaches that now go, wait a sec, this happens again. How are we going to reach our kids? Mm-hmm. Call us. Check us out, ReadyListSports.com. We've got the tools you need to continue educating your players on how to step on the field and know what to do.
ReadyListSports.com. I'll get it right.
Yes,
The National Football Foundation. In December, you went in New York City. You've had some time now to think back on that. What was that experience like for you? And just take me back to New York City and that run.
Yeah, you know, it was a real interesting year. 19 was, as you can recall and remember, it started off with a dear friend and teammate, Kwame Lassiter, passing away. And that was the day it was announced to the world and the country here that I'd made the Hall of Fame. So while I was elated and happy and excited about one thing, I was deeply saddened and, missing and hurting from a teammate and dear friend that had passed. So it was a really hard bag of mixed emotions for me because, you know, life and people you love is much more important than any award or honor, as far as I'm concerned. Yet it's such a huge honor to be into the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And to get that was, it just made me really think about all my teammates, all the coaches, all the players, all the training staff, everybody that was involved in the academic side of things at ASU that really, you know, without being selfish, with showing a lot of love and care for me, along with a lot of individuals, helped me throughout my ASU career. I couldn't have done it without all those guys. Of course, I had a special ability to lead, to motivate, to get after it, to somehow pull the best out of the people around me. And that's really what it was my teammates helped me to make it to the Hall of Fame. Like I said, I'm going in individually, my name's up there, but that represents that 96 team. And even some of the guys prior that were great leaders that were on teams junior year, sophomore year, freshman year, that taught me a lot about just being a young man, being a leader, and being okay with who I am. And you have to give it up to Bruce Snyder. I mean, he allowed me to lead. He gave me the rope that I needed to go make mistakes, but correct those. And eventually his idea of getting me to ASU to possibly win a national championship, we almost did that. So it was a special, special time to be in New York with my family. It was really amazing to be around those other phenomenal athletes, guys that just dominated in college, and be sitting up there with them saying, well, if I'm sitting here with them, that means I did something special too. And it was a lot of fun. A definite honor that Hall of Fames, you're in them, you don't get taken out. I won't make the NFL Hall of Fame, but College Hall of Fame, I'm very honored and humbled to be on that and represent all my, awesome teammates I had, at ASU. That's really how I feel about it. It's not me individually. It's me collectively with my teammates going in.
Yeah, that's how you've always been. And I remember you came in studio. I'll wrap it up here. I remember you came in studio as a, I don't want to say punky QB because that's a Jim McMahon reference, but you came in studio when you were at ASU and I said, would you bring your lineman in with you? And you're like, I want to bring my lineman in with me. And that was just you back then. And it's you all these years later. That's just how it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. So,
linemen are special and they want to put their heads and bodies in between you and someone that wants to kill you, not kill literally, but get you.
Yeah.
They're giving it up for the greater good. That's an unselfish group of guys that, to this day, I mean, Juan Roque would stop a train for me. So any other grown man in the world you know that would do that for you, you know, you got to realize that's a special bond.
I'll let you go off that. It's good seeing you. I'm glad you're doing well. Stay safe. Stay in touch.
I will, Brad. Thanks for having me on, and peace to everybody down in AZ.
There's Jake Plummer, and we're back with more after this timeout.